interesting, you know, I still want to talk a little bit about Parshas Kisese, because it's a big Parsha that has many, many topics, and then we'll move to the new Parsha as well. As I already mentioned, as you already know, there are over 50 mitzvahs in Kisese, so it's by far the biggest number of mitzvahs in the whole Torah, more than 1/12 of all of the mitzvahs in the Torah. But one of them is especially interesting in the halachic tradition. That is, the Torah repeats, well, first of all, it says there's an issur of shatnas, lesulba shatnas, do not wear shatnas, woolen linen, semer upishtim yachtav, do not wear wool and linen together. But then right afterwards it says, gedilim taselach, you shall make fringes, al arba kanspos kesuscha, on the four corners of your garment, right? That's the mitzvah of sitches, which is repeated, because it already was stated in the book of Bamidbar. So the Gemara ponders, why is the mitzvah of tzitzis repeated, and why is it repeated at this juncture? And the Gemara has a drasha that this is a limitation on the negative commandment, that even though there's an isser of wearing shatnas, but you're allowed to wear shatnas in your tzitzis. Now I'll discuss what case that is, but that teaches me an important klal. It's a klal, and this is a klal in Shas that is called Asei Doche Loisase. What does that mean? If the Torah gives you a positive commandment, like do something, and the only way you can fulfill the positive commandment is by transgressing a negative commandment. So you might think, so what should I do? Should I transgress the negative in order to do the positive? Or should I not do the negative even though I'm going to miss the positive? The Torah is teaching me the positive overrides the negative. I got to think positive. This is called Asei Doche Lo Sase. Positive commandments override negative commandments. And there are many examples of this. Not all, each one is different, and that's why you need different psukim. One classic example is why you can do a bris milah on the eighth day when it's Shabbos. Now, doing a bris is chilul Shabbos. You're causing bleeding and everything else, and yet the Torah says the mitzvah of milah overrides. Now, why is that only if it's the eighth day on Shabbos? If, for example, you're doing a bris late, and it's the ninth day or the tenth day, you don't do it on Shabbos. The answer is simple. You're only allowed to be docha, to supersede Shabbos, when it's necessary. Now, if it's the eighth day, I have to do it on Shabbos, because if I don't do it on Shabbos, it's not going to be the eighth day. But a bris on the 9th or the 10th or the 11th is the same mitzvah. There's bris on the 8th, and then there's bris every other time. So you'll never say a milah not on the 8th will override Shabbos, because you could just as well do it tomorrow. Right? And consequently, it is only a bris on the 8th day that's docha Shabbos, and not a bris that's shelo bezmana. Now this raises an interesting question. I'll give you an example. You know, we have this period of time that is called Bein HaShemashos. Bein HaShemashos is twilight. We know that after the stars are out, it's considered to be daytime. It's considered to be night. Right? So the halakhic definition of night is daytime. However, that's defined. Until sunset is definitively day, the period between sunset and stars, which astronomically is called twilight, is in halakha, it's interesting, halakha defines it as a suffix if it's day or night. And therefore you have to go l'chumrah on either side of the equation. That is why Shabbos is 25 hours. Shabbos must begin no later than sunset, because maybe sunset is night. But Shabbos cannot end any earlier than the stars coming out, because maybe sunset is day. Like, you got to be machmir on both sides, and that's why you get your, besides the mitzvah of adding on to Shabbos, that's a separate thing. But even if you're not, because adding on could be 1 minute, adding on wouldn't require you to wait until the stars are out and the like. Now, how long the period of twilight is actually depends. It does not depend on summer and winter, interestingly enough. In winter, just a little of astronomical knowledge, summer and winter determines the length of the day, right? In the winter, sunrise to sunset is shorter, and in the summer, sunrise to sunset is longer. Not much is true. But the relative period of time between sunsets and stars is not longer, it's not appreciably longer in the summer than it is in the winter. Rather, the thing that determines it is latitude from the equator. is the closer you are to the equator, the quicker is, or the shorter is the period of twilight. That's why you'll notice in Eretz Yisrael, twilight is a relatively short amount of time. In other words, if you measure from the time the sun comes down until the stars come out, even for Shabbos. Now, people keep a half an hour, you know, whatever, I mean, people are machmer, but it's essentially, Shabbos is over, the stars are out a half an hour after sunset. In the United States, which is a bit, well, at least the northern part of the United States, you know, I'm New York-centric or Baltimore, East Coast-centric, whatever it is, it takes at least 40 to 45 minutes, right? Because essentially, and this doesn't depend on winter and summer. People make a big mistake. People think twilight is shorter in winter and longer in summer. That's not true. Twilight is relatively constant, but it gets longer with the as you go north or south of the equator.
Why would it get longer?
Huh?
More north.
I don't know all of the. That's the observation. I mean, it's based on the angle of the Earth as it bends towards the sun, and all I can tell you is it is a function of latitude. Ben Hashemeshos is longer the further north or south you are at the equator. Ben Hashemeshos is almost non-existent at the equator. At the equator itself, Ben Hashemeshos, as soon as the sun goes down, it gets dark. I'm saying this is an important thing because people. Even Svarim, even rabbis, are sometimes incorrect about this. They assume that the winter-summer thing is relevant on Bein HaShemashos, when in fact it is not. Now, so let's imagine this. This is not relevant to our topic, but just something to think about. So let's say a child is born Friday afternoon, after sunset, but before the stars come out. So we're not sure if he's a Friday baby or a Shabbos baby. If Ben HaShemashos is night, he's a Shabbos baby. If Ben HaShemashos is day, he's a Friday baby. So, when can I do the bris? So what's interesting is, this is an interesting case where I'm doing the bris for sure on the wrong date. Because if he's a Friday baby, the bris would be Friday. If he's a Shabbos baby, the bris would be Shabbos. Right? So, my choice in terms of what is the eighth day is either Friday or Shabbos. But it turns out, I can do the bris on neither of those days. I can't do the bris on Friday, because maybe Ben HaShemashos is already night, and therefore Friday is day 7, and a bris on day 7 is not kosher. I can't do the bris on Shabbos, because maybe Friday is still a day, and Ben HaShemashos is, after Shkia is still day, so he's a Friday baby, and therefore Shabbos is the ninth day. So I can't do it on Friday because maybe it's the seventh day. I cannot do it on Shabbos because maybe it's the ninth day. So I have to do the bris on Sunday. Now Sunday for sure is not the eighth day. Sunday is either the ninth day or it might be the tenth day. In other words, if Friday is day 8, then Sunday is day 10. And if Friday is day 7, then Sunday is day 9. Now, you might argue, well, why can't I do it exactly the time the baby was born? The baby was born Friday at night. I'm sorry, Friday after sunset. So let me do the bris Friday after sunset. Because if it's daytime, the halacha is that it's Friday. And if it's nighttime, it's Shabbos, I'm doing it, then I'm allowed to do it on Shabbos, right? But that's not going to work either, because a bris done at night is not kosher. And if it's Shabbos, then halachically it would be night. So the bris would be kosher. So this is a very interesting example of where you for sure have to do the bris on the wrong day, because any of the possible right days would have a halachic problem. Yeah.
Wow.
You don't do it on Shabbat, because then it would be either the 8th or the 9th day. So if it was the 8th day, it's
yes. Day. And if it's the 9th day?
Then it's a day late.
That's what I'm saying. You're not allowed to do a bris on Shabbos when it's not the eighth day. That's the problem. You see, that's going to be your issue. So, all right.
So you could be technically born later. Let's say a baby was definitely born on Shabbos, born after a baby that was born on Friday.
You would have the bris first. Absolutely. If the baby is born late Friday night, if he's healthy, for sure he won Shabbos. But the baby that was born earlier will not be able to have his bris until Sunday. Okay, again, it's an interesting point. Again, it's by the way, the Gemara then says another surprising thing, that the period of Bein HaShemashos is either totally day, totally night, or it may switch in the middle, and we don't know exactly at what point it switches. Now, this is important. This is not just semantics, because the Gemara gives you the following case. Let's say, now this doesn't work in our calendar today, because we can never have Yom Kippur. The way our calendar works today, you will never have Yom Kippur adjacent to Shabbos. Yom Kippur will never be on Sunday, nor will it be on Friday. But you'll never have a Shabbos and a Yom Kippur together. That's the way the calendar is worked. But keep in mind that in the time of the Mishnah, we didn't operate with a fixed calendar. We operated with witnesses who would testify regarding the new moon. The calendar is a later product, a post-Korban Beis HaMikdash product. So in the time of the Mishnah, it would be possible to have Yom Kippur on Thursday night, Friday, and then Shabbos. Ooh. So let's say a person does the following. Let's say a person does Molacha. Now, if a person does Molacha Bein HaShemashos of Shabbos, whether it's Friday afternoon or Saturday afternoon, he cannot be chayav a sin offering because maybe he didn't do a malacha, right? Because maybe it's day. In other words, if I do it Friday night, maybe it's day. If I do it Motzei Shabbos, you know, maybe it's the night, right? So misafek, you're not chayav a sin offering. But consider this case. Let's say I do work bein hashmashos going from Shabbos to Yom Kippur. Let's say Yom Kippur is, which won't work in our calendar today, but Yom Kippur is Saturday night, Sunday. And I do Molacha Shabbos afternoon after sunset. So here, you might argue, Miman of Shach, I should be Chayav a Korban. Because if Bein HaShemashos is day, I did Molacha on Shabbos. And if Bein HaShemashos is night, I did Molacha on Yom Kippur. And doing Molacha on Yom Kippur, you're also Chayav a sin offering. So, if I know for sure I'm Chayav a sin offering, I just don't know if it's because of Shabbos or Yom Kippur, one would assume, bring your sin offering and make it Tanai. If Bein HaShemashos is the day, I'm bringing it for Shabbos. If Bein HaShemashos is night, I'm bringing it for Yom Kippur. So the Mishnah says, nope, that doesn't work either. Because it's not only a Shaila, is it all day or is it all night? But maybe it switched in the middle. So you did half of your malacha on Shabbos and half of your malacha on Yom Kippur, and then you're not mitzarif then because you didn't do a complete malacha in it. Okay? So that's a little bit of the complexity of Bein HaShemashos. Okay. But as I say, Bein HaShemashos is longer in northern and southern altitudes, latitudes, and it's shorter at equatorial latitudes. Did you want to say something?
Yeah, it obviously is not as important. But what happens, when would you place your birthday?
That is a good question. Now, Baruch Hashem, there aren't many halachos where you have to do your birthday. Now, Bar Mitzvah would be important. And your Bar Mitzvah would have to be the later date. We also have the shadows about Yahrzeits. People die. People do die. Bein HaShemashos. And the question becomes, if somebody dies, and it's a regular weekday, it doesn't have to be a Shabbos. The dies between the 12th and the 13th because the day changes at night. But if you're Masupik, if it's the 12th or the 13th, what day do you observe Yahrzeit? What day do you stop saying Kaddish, right? These are going to be very, very relevant. Many poskim say you have to assume the later date because the principle of Chazakah, it's a big question there. Chazakah always means that when you have a pre-existing status quo, you assume it until you know that it changed. Now, I know that this person was alive, right, until the 12th. And I'm a supik, is he dead on the 12th or dead on the 13th? So the chazaka would indicate that he's alive until the last possible moment.
Let me say the chazaka that way, that
yeah.
You don't know that it's the 13th yet. Because he died Bein HaShemashos, so assume it's the 12th until you know for sure it's the
13th. Yeah, you are right. That's why there's machlokes. I mean, the principle of Chazaka is very, very problematic, meaning like this. If I didn't know, see, Chazaka would work perfectly if I find a body, and I didn't know, did he die earlier or did he die later? So Chazaka would say, you push off his death to the last possible moment. And that would be true. Now, you have forensic testing today, but let's say, you know, you didn't have forensic testing. I don't know if someone died yesterday, someone died 2 days ago, or someone died today. I assume they died today. But when I know that somebody died at 6 o'clock today, but I'm mesupik, halachically do I characterize this day as the 12th or the 13th? Chazakah really doesn't fit that well, because chazakah may define when an event occurred, but it's not going to define what date that time is going to be. So some say, like you say, that chazakah doesn't work. Okay, this is a long digression, but again, it's good to just be aware of this bit of knowledge of Bein Hashmashas. Very, very important idea. Now, be it as it may, though, I brought this in to illustrate that when you do know the baby is a Shabbos baby, we say Esei Docheh. And one of the sources, not the only source of Esei Docheh Lo Saseh, is the smichus, is the juxtaposition of Parshiot between Sitzes and Shabbos. Now, I just want to raise this question. Okay, so if it's necessary to keep the mitzvah of tzitzis by shatnas, I'm allowed to do that. But the question is, why would it be necessary in particular? What are we talking about? If I have a woolen what? If I have a woolen garment, I'm allowed to put on linen tzitzis? Well, why? I can put on woolen tzitzis, like we all do. What would be the need to transgress the aveira of shatnas, for which I would have this principle? The positive overrides the negative. None of us wear shatnas in our tzitzis. What's the need? So the Gemara explains, the need is the following, and this is really one of the issues of Techelis. We know that the mitzvah of tzitzis in the Torah actually has two parts. Some of the strings are supposed to be white, and some of the strings are supposed to be dyed blue, a certain blue, which is said to be the color of the sky, the color of the sea, which is the color of the sky, which is the color of the Kisei HaKavod, and this is called Techelis. How many of your strings have to be Techelis is a machlokas, and you can see this, you can buy different versions. Is it one out of eight? Because remember, what is sitges? Sitges are four strings that are folded over, making eight. It's really four complete strings. So is it one out of the eight, which is one half string? Is it one whole string out of the eight, which is two strings? Or is it 50% of everything? Is it two whole strings? In other words, four out of eight. So you'll see different sheets. And of course, Techelis is expensive. So the more Techelis, the more you pay. But again, there's also machlokes of how do you interweave it, etc. But it's either one string, one out of eight, two out of eight, or four out of eight. Those are the three basic sheets. And as you know, there's a big controversy. Techelis has to be derived from a particular source called the chilosum, which is a non-kosher aquatic creature, and there's a big machlokas if we can identify it today. Most people say we cannot identify it. Some people say we can identify it, and that's why some people wear techelis, most people don't wear techelis, etc. It's a big issue. But here is the other point about techelis. The Gemara says techelis is not only a name for a color. Techelis refers specifically to wool. It is wool that is dyed a bluish color. Meaning, you're not mekayim the mitzvah of techelis on something that's not wool. So consequently, the case of Esei Docheh Lo Saseh by tzitzis, that if I have a garment of linen, and this is a zman when we knew what techelis was, so you would be permitted to put woolen techelis, only techelis, woolen techelis on a garment of linen. Now, because why? Because there's no way I could fulfill the mitzvah of techelis except by being over on shatnas. Now, today, where, let's first say if we don't have techelis, I'll address the other issue. If you hold you don't have techelis, so all I have is lavan, so there's no reason to transgress shatness, even on a linen garment, because all we would tell you to do is on a linen garment put linen tzitzis, which is not, we're not knowing that way anyway, right? Mashenkin, when there was techelis, you needed to put woolen tzitzis, and that's why we had the rule of Esei Docheh Lo Saseh.
So now, does that mean that principle that Esei pushes off a Lo Saseh is only when that's the only...
Absolutely, absolutely. That is called Efsher L'Kayim Shneim. When you can keep both, you're not allowed to be Iver. See, I'll go back to something in a second that's relevant to what you guys are learning, actually, because I want to illustrate the relationship of two concepts. Okay. Now, what about people who have techelus today? Are they allowed to take a linen garment and put in woolen sitis? The answer would be, if their identification would have reached a level of 100% certainty, the answer would be yes. But given the fact that even they concede that their arguments are only probabilistic and not certain, so they're entitled, in fact, the question why we don't do this, they're entitled to be machmir and say, I'm going to put on techeles because maybe it's techeles. But they're not entitled to use that questionable identification to transgress the Isser of Shattas. Because if it's not techeles, they're transgressing Shattas. So that's why even the people who wear techeles, nobody puts it on a linen garment, because that would be a possible suffix violation of Shatness, which would not be allowed. Yeah.
Why, even with 100% certainty that you have the right animal for the blue, for the techeles, would it be okay to put wool techeles on a linen garment? I'd just get a wool garment. It's not like there's such shortage of wool.
No, that's an excellent question. Tosos asked that question. Tosos asked the question, well, wait a second here. Given the fact that a person can choose what garment he wants to wear, so you never have to transgress the Aveira of Shattas. In other words, why say I'm going to wear a linen garment and therefore the only way I can fulfill Techeles is by Shattas? Let me put on a woolen garment and then I can fulfill Techeles without Shattas. Now, if the concept is whenever you can avoid the sin, you have to avoid the sin, right? Then L'chor, let me avoid it by changing garments. Yeah, that's a very excellent question. Tosus's answer is that, in a sense, there's a separate mitzvah on every garment, and consequently, the idea is that you look at, this garment is a mitzvah of tzitzis, this garment is a mitzvah. So you don't say, oh, I could do the mitzvah with another garment, because the mitzvah on this garment cannot be done without it. I mean, that's exactly why Rav Scheinberg, used to wear 100 pairs of tzitzis. He used to take he had the shita, which he actually applied, that it's not simply I should wear a garment with tzitzis, but rather every garment I wear has a separate mitzvah of tzitzis, and the like. Now,
Do you get a mitzvah if you don't wear it? You just...
There is an opinion, we don't pass anywhere, there actually is an opinion that says even begadim in a drawer should have tzitzis, and you're mekayim it. If you have 10 talithas that have tzitzis, you have a mitzvah of 10 talithas, even if you don't wear them. We don't paskin that way. If we paskin that way, there'd be no need to transgress by wearing it. I could just have the shatness in the drawer and the like. By the way, just shatness is a tricky one, because shatness only applies if the woolen linen is connected.
What does it mean by connected?
So let me give you an example. Let's say if I'm wearing a woolen shirt, or a linen shirt, and a woolen jacket, even though they're touching, that's not shatness. Linen, wool, they can touch. It's not shatness. But what's interesting is, if they're sewn together, that's shatness. But interestingly enough, if they're tied together, that's shatness. So this is a very interesting thing about a necktie. If I have a linen shirt, and I take a linen or a wool tie, and I put it around my neck, since I've tied the wool to the linen, that's considered to be connecting them, and that could actually be shatness. Okay, so the mere fact that they touch together, right, wool, linen, that's not a problem. Once they're connected by sewing or some type of connection, that would already create a problem. Okay, again, shatness is something to be aware of. Obviously, anything you buy, you should take to shatness testers. Unless you buy, there are stores here that pre-check things, so that's good. But even if something is 100%, artificial polyester or whatever it is, because those artificial stuff is much cheaper than real wool and linen. But sometimes, even in things like buttons, a button might be joined with a linen thread, etc. Because linen is a very material, actually. It's good for buttons. So there's stitching, there's buttons, there's all sorts of places where there can be shatness, particularly in European suits. Again, there are websites for this, and you can get information. Certain brands, like American, tend to be cheaper, so they use fewer natural fibers. European suits tend to be a bit more high class, so they have a lot of natural fibers, including linens and the like. So shatness tends to be there a lot. So, you know, you need to know what to look for and the like.
I've heard some people say that if the suit isn't worth a certain amount of money, then you're, even though there is a chance, but since the chance of shatness is so small, you don't have to check it.
I'm not sure what the lumbus of that heter would be. Remember, the Gemara in Brachos says, if I'm walking in the street and I discover I'm wearing shatness, I am mechuyev, assuming, let's say, it's in my, even in my pants, which is very unlikely, I am mechuyev to undress in the middle of the street. I am not allowed to transgress the aveira of shatness, even if it would cause me great personal humiliation. Okay. Now, there's an interesting machlokas rishayim on this. Okay, so if you discover you're wearing shatness, you got to undress in the middle of the street. Let's say you don't know you're wearing shatness, but I know you're wearing shatness. Am I mechuyev to tell you in the middle of the street?
Oh.
Or can I wait until you get home or whatever it is? Because once you know, you have to undress, but can I withhold the information? So that's a machlokas. The Rambam says, either I gotta tell you or I gotta rip it off myself. That's what the Rambam says. The Rush says, I can wait, and not inform you. Same thing by a Kohen. Shevin Aruch has this interesting question. What if you're a Kohen? And you're sleeping in a house, and God forbid somebody dies in the house. Now a Kohen has to leave the house when there's a dead body, because he's under the same tent. But let's say you're sleeping, naked or in pajamas or something. Do I have to wake him up and tell him? Because then he has to run out the way he is. He cannot get dressed once he knows, right? So the Ramah actually paskins based on the Rush that I should wake him up. But I don't have to tell him that there's a mace in the house, because then he'd have to run out either naked or in pajamas. I'm allowed to tell him maybe somebody is dying, and therefore, hurry up and get dressed, And that's because of Kavod HaBrios. But that's only if he doesn't know. Once he knows, he would be mechuyev to, right? So that's machlokas. In fact, based on this, again, this is, we're far afield, the native view that as a whole tshuva, do I have to tell a husband that his wife is committing adultery? Because remember, a woman who commits adultery, he's not allowed to be with. But maybe in such a case, I'm not obligated to send this idea of the Rush. The Nevi Yudas case is very wild. The Nevi Yudas case, it's really a family tragedy. It involved a son-in-law who was mezaneh with his mother-in-law. And now he wants to do tshuva. So does he have to tell his father-in-law that, sorry, Dad, you can't really stay with the mom anymore? Because I was with Anna with her. Whatever. So, actually, maybe Huda says, Machmer. So we paskin not to tell, but maybe he'd actually paskin if you have to tell, this and that, and the like. Okay, so these were difficult shilas. Okay. Now, I just want to clarify something. You guys are learning sukkah, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, here is an important point to clarify. You've come across the idea of mitzvah haboa ba'avera. That mitzvah babi aveir, right? What does the Gemara say? That if I steal a lulav, so I'm not yotzei. So on the first day of Sukkot, I'm not yotzei, because the halacha is it has to belong to me. So even if I borrowed it, if you didn't give it to me as a matana, I wouldn't be yotzei. Lukachtem lachem. But the Gemara asks on the other days of Sukkot, where it doesn't have to belong to you, so why shouldn't a stolen lulav be... We're not saying you're allowed to steal it. You're not allowed to steal it, but, you have a sin for stealing it. But let me have a mitzvah of taking lulav. So Shmuel answers, and this is how we paskin, that the reason why a stolen lulav is puzzle, even the rest of Sukkot, right? Remember the Gemara, where you don't need to own it, is because any mitzvah that you do through the commission of a sin, if the mitzvah that I'm doing is through the commission of an aveira, not only do I have an aveira, that we knew even before Shmuel, but the fact that the mitzvah came through the aveira means the mitzvah itself is not a mitzvah. It's not simply, I have an aveira and I have a mitzvah. Rather, you've lost everything. You've done an aveira and you don't have a mitzvah. Right? That's called mitzvah habo b'aveira. Now, the question to ponder is, well, wait a second, isn't this a direct contradiction here? Because on one hand, we say, a mitzvah that you do through an aveira is not a mitzvah at all. On the other hand, we have this other rule that seems to say that a positive commandment overrides a negative commandment. In other words, the same way I say that if I need to transgress Shabbos to fulfill Sittus, I fulfill the mitzvah. So too, if I need to fulfill my mitzvah by stealing a lulav, why don't I say the positive overrides the negative? In other words, I'm just asking, there seems to be an inherent contradiction between two rules. One rule says that done through a transgression is not a mitzvah. There's another rule that says the need to fulfill a positive overrides a negative and takes it away. So when do you say, you know, when do you say this one, when do you say that one, right? These are two different klalim that are in contradiction. So, yeah.
Does it have anything to do with the difference between mitzvah, benad, and adam? Because, I mean, if you're stealing from someone, you're taking away from them, either you're not allowing them to do the mitzvah themselves,
right,
or you're taking away their own.
So you want to suggest that perhaps we never say the positive overrides the negative if the negative is a ben adam lechaveira.
Yeah.
That might be a good, bit of reasoning. That might be a good svara. But just in terms of logical priority, I just want to bring out this idea. Logically, the first thing you have to ask yourself is this a proper case for a positive overriding a negative? Because like this, if the positive overrides the negative, then you're not doing an aveira. If you're not doing an aveira, it's not a mitzvah babi aveira. Right? So if you had a flowchart, the first question is, when you have a positive that can be done by a negative, ask yourself, is this a proper case for Esse Dochelosessa? If it is, go ahead and do the mitzvah, and it's not a mitzvah babi aveira. If it's not, then you have mitzvah babi aveira. Now, so obviously, the case of the stolen lulav is vadaya case, where the Gemara seems to say, doesn't even mention it, that you don't say the positive overrides the negative. Why is that so? So your reasoning is because it's ben adam l'chaveira, and that might be a good svara. Another svara that's given is that we never say that stealing is the only way you can do the mitzvah, because you could have done the mitzvah by asking permission, or getting your own, or going to somebody else and borrowing. So unless you're at a desert island, and that'd be an interesting question, where this is the only possible opportunity, it's not shayach esei docha lo sase, because you always have the ability of doing the mitzvah without doing the aveira, right? So once you say, therefore, I don't say esei docha lo sase, I then enter the alternative world of mitzvah haba the aveira. That's how logically it works. Okay. But be it as it may, Ramban in Parshas Yisro says a very, very fascinating idea. The Ramban in Parshas Yisro says, what is the svara? Why should a positive override a negative? I mean, the whole Torah is equal. Everything in the Torah is equal, right? What gives me the right to prioritize the positive over the negative? So the Ramban says a beautiful reasoning. The Ramban says that we know there are two levels of serving Hashem. There is serving Hashem with love and serving Hashem with fear and reverence, and both are very important. But the higher level is to serve God out of love. The Ramban says, mitzvos lo sase, don't touch things, don't do this, are expressions of my reverence for God, my fear of God. Like, you know, like your father says, don't touch that thermostat, whatever it is, right? So yira, right? I don't touch it, etc. But when I do things for the Almighty, they are expressions of love. Because when you love somebody, you want to do things for them. When you're afraid of them, so you keep away. So the Ramban says, since Avas Hashem is a higher madrega than Yiras Hashem, that is why the positive mitzvah overrides the negative mitzvah. Now, of course, it's an important idea, though, that even though Av is greater than Yira, you also have to understand that you can't jump to Ava without a foundation of Yira. Now, Yira is considered to be the foundation of serving God. And then Ava is the edifice that you build. But just like if you tried to build a second story without a first story, your house would collapse. It wouldn't stand at all. So Ava without Yira cannot exist. So one shouldn't just say, I just want to love Hashem and not be fearful. And the Avudraham says that this relationship is expressed in every bracha over water. If you think about it, all brachos are non-grammatical. Because they start off referring to Hashem in the second person, and then they end by referring to Hashem in the third person. Let's take the bracha for water. Baruch atah Hashem. Blessed art you, Hashem. I'm talking to Hashem. Elokeinu melech haolam, our God, the King of the Universe. Shehakol nihya bidvaro. Everything came into existence by His word. Now you're switching here. Because you should have said, blessed art you, Hashem. Shehakol nihya bidvarecha. Everything came into existence by your word. Why do you switch to His word? You see, so you're going from what the Balei Dikta call nochach. Nochach is direct communication. To nister, to a concealed communication, where you have a third party here. And the Avudram says, very beautiful, Avudram is one of the Rishonim who wrote on Tefillah. Rav David Avudram actually says that this is because we have two relationships to God that have to exist simultaneously. There is the intimate relationship of love. We hear kind of face to face, atah, God's closeness to us. But then we have to have Yiras Hashem, which is God's infinite distance from us in terms of His power and the like. And in every bracha, you have to encapsulate both the Avas Hashem, which is God's closeness, and the Yiras Hashem, which is God's might and God's grandeur and God's omnipotence and power. Because if all you have is Ava, you might become too familiar. God is my buddy. Hey, we're like this. You know, I can do whatever I want. You need Yira to understand that Hashem is our King. But if you just had King, you would not have the warmth and love of the relationship. So you have to combine the Abbas Hashem and the Yira Hashem.
So then why in the brachas are we starting with love instead of fear?
Yeah, so it's a good point. In other words, foundationally, Yira comes first. But I think we start with where we want to end off, meaning I want to have this image of Hashem as someone that I love, but then fill in the details, so to speak. Right, so in your mind, the dominant relationship is love. And indeed, that's the way it is with parents, too. One has to have both the love of parents, which is the way you honor them, and fear and reverence. But they say if you're a parent, psychologists, but I've seen Torah psychologists talk about this. They say a parent should strive that 70% of their interactions should be positive and loving, no more than 30% negative. Sometimes we may go the opposite way, or whatever it would be. So even though you need a foundation of Yira, but it should be the less pronounced aspect of the relationship. Okay, so this is kind of the idea of Esei Dochalosasa, and how it fits in with the idea of Mitzvah HaBoah Bi'Aveira, right? Because these are two different principles, but you don't get to Mitzvah HaBoah Bi'Aveira until you've eliminated the possibility of Esei Docha Lo Sasa. Okay?
Yeah. Yes. Obviously only applies in very specific circumstances.
Well, it is a global principle, but as I say, there are technicalities. So in most cases, you need to investigate. You need to ask the shayla whether it would be shayach. In average life, you tend not to have too many cases where you're allowed to do that. The most common example we have today is a bris milah on the eighth day, which is Shabbos. But Yibam is rife with those examples. Let me give an example. Again, you have to be very careful. You have to be a lamdan here. Let's say a Kohen marries a woman and a Kohen dies without children. So there's a mitzvah on his brother to do Yibam. Now normally that's not a problem because a regular Kohen could marry a widow. But what if a Kohen dies and a Kohen Gadol? Now a Kohen Gadol has a negative commandment not to marry a widow. But would the mitzvah of Yibam override that? Well, you might think yes, but the Gemara says not. And the reason is because while a positive can override a negative, a Kohen Gadol marrying a widow is both a positive commandment and a negative. Because it says in the negative, thou shalt not marry an almana. And it says in the positive, thou shalt marry only a virgin. So even if an asay could override a lo sasa, it cannot override a lo sasa and an asay. So as a result, you have to be very, very careful.
What about Bris Milah and Shabbos and Shabbos both?
That's a good question. And so you have to, Shabbos is also a mitzvah sasay, Yomashvi Tishbeis. So that's why the Gemara says you actually need a pasuk. That's why a Mila B'Shabbos is not derived from the general rule of Esei Dokalos. It's derived from specific pasukim. And that's why you'll often need very specific limudim, and you're not going to know it from the general principle. Right, so I'm saying, so you have to be very careful in this, because you have to know what's a losasa, what's an asay, you know, all of that, all of those different things. Okay, have a good day. We'll see you
Thanks so much.